And that was one of the first things I wanted to remind everyone is that our CIDR sessions are always recorded and available from the CIDR site. So if you'd like to go back and review a CIDR session, or if you know of a colleague who wished to attend today but was unable, I'm going to post the link to the recordings in the text box so that you can pass that on, okay? And before we get started, I'm going to turn over the mic again to Philip Watland. Philip is our senior researcher with CIDR, and he's organizing the upcoming CIDR workshop at the CNIE conference. And I know he wants to tell everyone a little bit about that. So you go ahead, Philip.
Thanks very much, Lynn. Just sort of a last reminder that at the CNIE conference, prior to the actual conference beginning on the Sunday, we are having our annual CIDR workshop. And as you can see, we have a number of presenters, some of the names that you will recognize. And the topic is to do with the Internet in support of distance education research activities. And some of the topics that will be presented are such as weaving the web in doctoral study at a distance, research in cyberspace, trends and internet research, web strategies for collaborative writing, and also wikis, blogs as tools for research data collection, and telecollaboration tools for delocalized research teams. It's going to be at the Banff Lodge, and the website to come to the workshop is shown here. You can go to the CIDR site, scroll to the bottom, and simply click on the link. You can obviously attend the workshop without attending the conference, or if you are attending the conference, we'd certainly welcome you to come to our workshop. We look forward to that, and thanks, Lynn. Back to you.
Thanks, Phil. Now I'd like to introduce today's presenter, and that is Ismael Pena-Lopez. Ismael is a lecturer and researcher in the School of Law and Political Science at the Open University of Catalonia in Barcelona. Previous to his current position as a lecturer at the Open University of Catalonia, Ismael was the founder and former director of the Cooperation for Development program at the university, and that was mainly concerned with e-learning for development. During those 5 years there, he says he was seduced by information and communication technologies for development, and he started to shift his interests to more academic issues. Ismael's varied research interests include aspects related to ICT for development, such as e-readiness, the digital divide, and nonprofit technology. He's also, as we'll see today, engaged in research related to e-learning and empowerment. He includes under this umbrella digital capacity building and literacy, e-portfolios, and open access to knowledge. Now, Ismael's taking a novel approach to presenting and Illuminate today. At least it's novel for our CIDR presentations. And rather than using a PowerPoint presentation, he's going to be sharing his desktop. So consequently, you might experience some streaming issues with the sound or the screen image. And we've done our best to minimize these problems. But let us know if the streaming is impacting on the presentation, because we can make some adjustments also to improve that. Ismael's going to be stopping periodically to invite discussion, and at that time we encourage you to click on the microphone in the bottom left corner of your screen if you have any questions or comments. And if someone else is speaking, you can use the hands up button that's in the participant box. It's the little hand with the up green arrow, and that indicates that you'd like to speak next. If you don't have audio capabilities today, you can also type a message in the text box. And I'm going to try to bring those any questions or comments in the text box to Ismael's attention. And on that note, I will turn the mic over to Ismael and let him share everything he knows about personal research portals with us over the next 55 minutes. So thanks, Ismael, for joining us today.
Okay, good morning or good evening or good afternoon, wherever you are. I'm really pleased to have 22 plus me people there. So when I was when we prepared with Lynn the session today, I really didn't have any idea on how it would go. So first thing we're going to do is just make some questions just for me to know who you are. Or what are your expectations on this session? What do you want to debate? What do you want to learn, etc.? For me, it would be very interesting not to give a full-time speech and just unidirectionally, but that you let me to the places that you want me to explore. I don't know if you have been able to read the readings that were put on the announcement. My plan today was to go back to an article I wrote some months ago, which was about ICT4D and digital divide and open access for development, and try to shift it more to teaching issues and educational issues. So in the making of it, please do interrupt me and do help me do say things that do think are not correct, just polemize, do whatever you want, really. So first of all, I want to know a little bit more about you. So please read these questions and vote, which is going to be anonymous, as Lynn said, and say, in this case, if you write a blog on a regular basis, if you don't, and what kind of blogging are you doing? So please. For the voting issues, you gotta use the letters up on the top of the application. So there's some remaining people. Can you please click A, B, C up on the upper part of the screen? Okay, so I think we should go to the next one. So in this case, it's where you have the domain on your own. I mean, and as you said, it really doesn't mean to be ismaelpeña.com, but just a domain you own and you just publish everywhere. So I think now it's ready. Yeah, you can go on voting. So next one. I'm sorry. In this case, what's your experience uploading your works, articles, slides, working papers? But normally, this means in Europe. I mean that you do it. I mean not that you send the PDFs to someone engaged of feeding a repository, but that you directly do this.
I'm just going to interrupt for a second. Sorry, I'm getting feedback. Not answering. The A, B, C, and E are in the top toolbar.
I think this is something that while we were preparing now, we were chatting around, just making time. This issue just came up, is whatever, if you are using a feed reader normally or just at random, you don't know what it is. One and last one, what do you expect from this session? I mean, we came here having read everything and mastering everything about feeds and blogs and everything and just want to engage in the debate, or just on the contrary, you wanted to listen to someone just trying to find if could do some news or some hints about doing some things that you read about? So I think we should start. I don't know if you could see the results from the polls. So one, I don't know if you could see them. Second, I don't know if you could, but I was too fast on changing slides. But I guess that more or less the main profile now from the ones you hear. Yes, could see the results. Okay, thank you. So I think you've been that. So the results say that more or less everyone's aware of what's happening out there, but either you want to and you cannot, you're not convinced yet, or either you want but you are not, you think you're not prepared. I don't know. I'm just gonna make a full disclosure. I'm a real fan and a fanatic about open access and about having a digital identity. And about being out there on the web, having a huge and a heavy presence there. And I think that there are really lots of benefits of doing so. I think there are lots of benefits in many, in just a lot of issues, but today I want to try to share what are my impressions, and sorry, and it's more impressions because it's just some fieldwork, but not exactly a big survey of things that are happening outside, things that people are doing, problems that people are finding, etc. So this is more or less the plan. I think you can see everyone the map. This is the plan of what I really want to talk more or less. But again, if you want to interrupt, if you have any doubts, if you think that there are things that you already know, I can skip it. So please, again, feel free to say yours. So the first things that I want to show or to put up on the table was just that some problems that some of them are not very, very new. Just imagine you're a junior or you're dealing with in a field that there's not a lot of people working about it. I mean, maybe if you are working about microeconomics, there's billions of people talking about this or doing research about this, or constructivism or behaviorism, surely there's a lot of people. But maybe there's some little issues, small issues that you are really interested in, the small topics that are not really covered, not by standard literature, not by standard scholars, because maybe they are just PhD students and they have not reached the big media or the big academic media, of course. And the problem is that you have two problems: have how to let your voice heard amongst this lot of people, this lot of information that is out there. And the other thing is just the reverse. So how can you access knowledge, data, information, knowledge? I know there are different things, but I'll try to use it as the same thing. So one is how you get heard. So the other thing is how you hear people talking to things that are interesting to you, but that normally don't reach the mainstream, in this case, the mainstream scholar media. So imagine ICTs or instructional technology, which is more or less a new issue, or just imagine e-portfolios, or imagine Second Life for education, or gaming for education, which are issues in the educational field that are really quite new and not broadly covered. So how do you explain people that you're doing these kind of things, and how do you get to know people that are doing these kind of things? So here you have a short list of some problems that most of them are not really new, but some of them, just because there's more and more information out there, there's more and more people being able to publish and being published, it's being increasingly difficult. These problems are really getting a higher relevance. So the invisibility of the teacher, and I'm talking about teacher-to-teacher relationship, not teacher-to-student relationship. The invisibility of what you do, imagine that you want to publish something and it will take 1 year or two to do one thing, to get published, but you're talking about Second Life. I mean, who knows what Second Life will be in 1 year, but in the meanwhile, your article is being reviewed, it's being published or not, etc., which is linked to how problems are relevant today and how problems might get changed in a fortnight. Again, some topic doesn't represent it because gaming is not important. Also, all the mainstream things that gaming is not important in education. So if everything is underrepresented, your topic are underrepresented, if you are invisible, if your work is so new that you cannot find colleagues in your department that they are dealing with the same thing. So building your network, which before was quite easy because you shared a department with 20, with 30 people more or less on your same area, now these topics that are getting atomized. How do you build this network? How do you get out of your shell and get to know the people and people know you? And again, how to publish. And same for the people, this was due to reach the others, in the case for you to be reached. So what solutions are we finding? I think that mainly three of them. It's not exhaustive, I just try to grow. But one thing is try to publish in open journals, which means that every time you Google something, you're likely to find information and it's going to be free and you can access it without any cost, besides your connectivity, of course. this is really relevant because there are some well-established journals that won't publish anything which is not mainstream, which is not the traditional discipline that they are focusing. So going open is not only an issue of economics, of cost, but it's just the opportunity to reach other people and to get rich. The problem is that not all these journals are that open. If they are fully open, it's okay, but sometimes there are embargoes of 1 year, and of course you have the usual delays of reviewing and editing. So solution number one, with their problems. The other solution that we've seen so far, and this is being very used with educational resources, is to build institutional repositories. So it's your university, it's your research center that it's going to upload directly or just setting up a tool. It's going to upload all your production, be it individually or in groups. So you have one server managed by your university or your whoever, and then you can upload there everything. So even if it's not published because it's a working paper or it's something that you just made up, some ideas, some slides, some position papers, you can upload for free at the cost of the university in this case, all your material there, and if it's well tagged, if it's well, if it has the proper metadata, you're going to be found. So the good thing here is that you can publish just without the publishing, without all the publishing procedures, but you can have your content uploaded on the net. So you can have post prints, have preprints, open educational resources, you surely know many of them having all the resources. And I'm saying just uploading, but of course you can build them also on the net. But again, there's some problems which are related sometimes to bureaucracy on one hand. So if you have to upload things on your university server, for instance, I was reading Terry Anderson's lines. So one problem might be bureaucracy. There might be some guidelines or even some human resources which are lacking. So even if you have the possibility to upload your content, it might be not that easy. And the other thing is that it's okay, maybe at Athabasca Alex's case, you can have everything uploaded. And Athabasca is going to be a perfect place and renowned for having a lot of content, but maybe Terry doesn't have it that easy to be found as himself. Maybe Athabasca is going to get found because of having a lot of content there, but the individual might be behind the curtains of institutional trademark. And third aspect, of course, you can go to forums, to discussion leads, etc. I'm not going to go very deep on this because it's older, it's not that web 2.0. So having this problem, I think that the things we should, I mean, these problems, the green ones and the solutions, and the problems behind the solutions. I was keeping reading. Now about incentives or sticks, I'm gonna go afterwards because I think that it's on the own benefit that people are doing. I'm going to do this. So about the goals. So the researcher wants to get found. So one incentive to upload content to the net, either if it's on an open journal, in this case we'll be submitting and uploading on institutional repository, is to get your digital identity. I mean, you can go to a congress and have a public speech, and then from the moment you have spoken in the public in a keynote or on a communication, everybody more or less gonna know who you are. On the net, you really have to work again to do this, and you have to build a continuous digital identity which a congress, which is offline, will not bring you. So first thing, the net, Google, call it whatever, should know who you are, what are your interests, what have you done, and where are you. But there's a thing that it's changing. If you publish a paper and you look for a paper which is 10 years old, the interest might have changed a lot. So it's not the same thing that having your record or your interest track or your path all along some different papers, and being able to know at this right moment, if I Google right now who's doing something on e-portfolios, to know who is it. Because you might have published an e-portfolio 10 years ago, and now you are not interested anymore, or just the contrary. You might be really interested now in e-portfolios because you get tired of your previous research, and Google should be able to find what are your interests right now. Second thing is how to engage in the conversation. So once people know who you are and you know who people are, okay, you really like to have your network, be able to produce papers on a shared basis, etc. So really engage in a debate, and not a debate that happens once a year in the best conference you can assist, and you're able to assist because of money, because it's on the other end of the world, but every day. And last, of course, be able to get found by your work. So not only who you are, but what have you done, to be able to read what you've done, what are you doing, what do you want to do. So I think that this is the goal that every researcher always, but most especially in these days because things happen so fast, does, or at least myself, does have in mind. So who am I? Be able to engage with other people and work with other people, and of course that everything that I have done, that it's immediately reachable. So you don't need to pay for things, you don't need to wait for a year long to have my paper published, because you really want to know right now what I was writing, because you want to publicate it tomorrow. So my proposal, which I took in practice, and is more or less this sort of prototype. I don't think that like an e-portfolio or like the personal learning environment, I don't think there's exactly one way of doing things. I don't think that we don't even have a formal definition or a proper definition of personal research portal. But to fix these things about these problems of being found, finding people, or being able to be engaged, to engage with other people, I think that this set of tools that are already there, that are free, that you can download them or you can use them for free, just like EduBlocks, which is a blog that you don't have to install, etc. So the Web 2.0 applications made it very easy for people that are not tech savvy to try and have this presence on the net, to upload their content and publish in a very broad, I mean not in a scholarly basis, but just publish in a way of letting know. So publish the content, their ideas, etc., and also that engage in conversation with other people. So first thing I would build is a website, a static one, which says I am Ismael Peña from the Open Catalonia University, where I am, where I work, what is my profile. So everything you would put on a static. But one thing that changes with the website is that you can update it in minutes. And you can update it in minutes even if you're not a coder. I mean, there are lots of ways with Google Pages, with EduBlogs, or with Elk, that you can do this sort of thing. So just state your profile. Second thing is, okay, this says on a static basis what I am, or what do I generally do. But on a blog, I'm able to say what I do every day on a more flow basis. Just give me a second for... Yeah. If you let me 2 minutes, Paula, when I go to the right side, of my map, I will try and answer all these things that you're asking. But I agree that this what I'm going to debate here is not a substitute but a complement, and absolutely, I think that I want to put this really clear that a form of publishing it's here to stay, at least in the short run, and what I'm proposing is just a complement to the formal, really, I have to say it, very well watched, etc. Also with me. So I'm really thinking about something complementary to offline things, like just like congresses, and offline things just like paper, which comes normally on formal publication. We're going to talk about the tenure track afterwards too. So first thing, who I am on a static basis. Second thing, who I am but on a more dynamic basis. So you have reflections that they are on a work in progress basis, but you might want to share them just before they get published or they get reviewed by some referees. So the blog should help you to do this, to say that this is my interest today, and this might be commenting some article or just having read some homework article and just shifting your own research towards other aspects. So again, reflections, everything that is flow. On the contrary, the wiki should be a place that you could put your more stock knowledge, and maybe before it gets on the shape of a paper. You might have directories, you might have people doing things, sort of files, or short reflections on things, or reviews, or some bibliographies you read, etc. Important to know who are you related to. So a blog role, or my list of friends, or colleague, whatever you want. It's a way to show who you are reading, and maybe to be fun who's reading you. Bibliography manager, I think already you already know, but publish on your website so people can know what are you reading and why. And I'm going to explain all these things afterwards here. Of course, your personal repository. I really believe that besides being present on institutional repositories, on papers and journals, it's really a good idea to self-archive your published papers and publish your minor works, just like working papers, and you can do this embedded in your own site, which would be this prototype, and of course an external application, and think on a SlideShare, think on other repositories, etc., and of course all the courseware, which means open educational resources, but also your syllabuses, your reading list, etc. And other web 2.0 applications, just like to share images, to share videos, to share podcasts and sound, etc. Two things that this prototype I think that should have, one is metadata. Most of these applications do provide metadata for this content, so you don't have to think about it. So, and the good thing about metadata is that you are found by search engines or by aggregators. And the second one is RSS feeds, which makes possible that being aggregated, sometimes being searched, sometimes being tracked. I mean, if you have an RSS feed, you can track your content and your own site and see who's reading you, who's mentioning you, etc., who's citing you. And of course, this makes possible that your content goes to other people more easily. I don't know if there are any questions now. So far, just a short exposition about some problems, some solutions, and how these Web 2.0 applications can help in bringing knowledge and bringing you more present. No? Okay. So, benefits about all these things and why. First of all, you've shaped your a digital identity. For me, this means a couple of things. One thing is that you are present on a landscape that already exists and is complementary to offline issues. So besides being on a classroom, besides being on a campus, besides being on a conference, on a congress, you are also on the cyberspace. And there... Okay, so more and more, there's more people that go first to the internet to Google for things or for people. Then they go to data, to online databases, then they go to the library, and then they go to a paper book. I mean, there's more and more evidence about this. So being on the net is more and more crucial if you want to find people and be found. The first thing about having a blog and having a wiki and having everything you read on a web bibliography manager is that your curriculum or your resume is live. This means that if yesterday I published an article and I put it on the web, tomorrow Google's gonna find me. If yesterday I submitted one word to a journal and I got accepted, it's likely that it's gonna be published in December. For instance, I just got accepted a chapter on a book. I don't even know if it's gonna get published by this year. So having a blog, having a wiki, having everything you read online and around you makes that this CD is live. And the good thing is that all the content you are putting on your website around your name acts as an identity wrapper. So if now I upload something, for instance, about Cristóbal Cobo, who is now in this room, his book about Web 2.0. If I upload the reference and my comments on his book in my site, it's likely that someone looking for Cristóbal is going to find me. And provided that we share interests, Cristóbal and I, about Web 2.0 and Education 2.0, thank you, Cristóbal. So we are sharing some interests. So it's very good that people looking for Cristóbal finds me, because there are some issues that we are working together, that we share, so many that we share. And it's not because I share Cristóbal's point of view, but just I did it automatically by commenting Cristóbal's book in my site. So this identity is not only because I said that I want to do research in learning2.0, but just automatically shaping me. Of course, there's a part of internet positioning that is should not be very new, as being also positioned in EC Web of Knowledge or in other places. So more and more being found by search engines. So I don't want to say Google all the time, but whatever, Yahoo or Microsoft or whatever. So being able to be found it's really an issue. Another thing is that even if we scholars are supposed to read and to be informed and to be up to date on our disciplines, we all know that we not always have that time. But again, if you maintain your own site, it's a way of being forced. I know this should not be the goal of one's site to put pressure on yourself, but this is an issue. And the second thing is that more and more you let others know what are you reading, who are you reading, in my example about Cristóbal, and when, which means that you can find me, but if you find me looking by, again, sorry about Cristóbal, and it was that 2 years ago, you can see that what I'm reading now is not necessarily related to what I was reading 2 years ago. So having your site is a way of forcing you to be informed, to force you to read, and to force you to reflect on what you read. Not say, okay, I know this book's been published, but I'm gonna make the file for when I need it for a paper. But a good thing is that you do it right now, and the good thing is that you start and build a network. of people you read, people that read you, and again, people that can find you, but who's reading you. Another good thing, and I was talking about this, about the RSS, the more you publish on your website with Web 2.0 applications that have RSS feeds, the more that the information gets to you and your information gets to people. So you don't really need to tell people that you publish something, as it's happened with tables of contents in journals, but they just subscribe to somebody's feeds and I know what are they doing right now. I don't have to wait for them to be formally published. What you read is what you store normally. So a thing that it can be very useful for this kind of tool is that you can manage your knowledge. And you can do this complementary with other tools you can have on your desktop. But at least just do a few things that are different from having all your knowledge on a website. First thing is that it's accessible from everywhere. So either if you are accessing your personal research portal from home or from the university or on a plane when you can, etc. You know, all your content is there. On the other hand, if you have it on the pen drive and you forget your pen drive, it's no more there. The second thing is that it's more likely to link one to each other. I mean, you can, on a same blog post, you can link to your wiki, to other blog posts, to files you uploaded, etc. And the other good thing, which is what I put here in portfolio, is that, again, the more knowledge you put there, the more your identity is shaped, but not only shaped on a basis of keywords, but also in evidences. So, provided that you can, just excuse me a minute. Sorry, I'm back. So the good thing about having all your content there is that you can manage it, you can search it, you can link it. I mean, it's always in the same platform. You don't have it spread all over your desktop and in papers and post-its around your screen. But also people can see what you have and what you have done. And they can evaluate you and assess, I would say, your quality. But if we are really concerned about our tenure track and we are concerned about reputation as a scholar, why not only in journals and what indicators says, impact indicators, but also directly assessing what on the output of one person. Two more things that this personal research portal makes possible. One thing is that through open licensing, you really can reach more, zillions more people that with closed licenses or publishing the paper. So open licensing really means that your reach is way, way, way beyond your normal basis. And the other thing is that you can claim authorship in a more easier way than you would on paper. I know this can sound surprising, and everybody knows that it's more easy to copy things from the web than from a paper because you have to type them and you have to OCR them. But the thing is that if I copy now something from 1920, it's very difficult for you to know from where I copied it. If I copied something from the web, it's pretty straightforward to find the original source. So the sooner you put something on the web, the sooner you are just marking it to territory. This should not only be useful for people to manage their information or to manage their identities and say how good they are, but of course, for me, the highest goal to be achieved should be to have a network. And again, imagine that you are on a doing research on something very new, that there's not a lot of people out there doing this thing, or that the colleagues that are doing this research are just on the other side of the pond, or that you just don't have any resources to attend some conference, etc. So having all this content right out there, having stated who you are and what are you doing, and why it should be easy, and forgive me if I'm repeating me again and again and over, to find who's right out there doing these sort of things, and to be able to engage in the conversation. And when I say engage in the conversation, I mean that mostly blogs, but all of the applications, you can comment, you can make trackback, so I can make a comment on somebody's blog, and it will appear in their blog that I commented on their blogs. So directly or indirectly, you're building a network, and you're in this, you do this on your blog row, saying who are you reading. You do this by commenting, by posting about other people's posts on your blog, but also commenting in other people's blogs that gonna link back to your blog by uploading files, etc. So the more you interact with people directly because you write their names on their blog, or indirectly because you link to their blogs, so they can track back who's talking about them. So the more easy is that you can engage in this kind of conversation, that you can build a network. So just to because it's going to be more easy that you can have this presence in other places, that you can have invitation of people that otherwise would never get to you, etc. I really want to have an example about everything I said so far, and a sort of wrap up or sum up. I don't know whether you know Scott Wilson at the UK. He's said to be the person that first came with the idea of the personal learning environment. So he challenged the idea of the learning management system, the virtual campuses, and he came up with the idea that we should be able to have our personal learning environments or management systems. So it's good to know that it took him 1.5 years to have something formally published and to have a communication accepted. But by the time he went to the first Congress and submitted that communication, everybody already knew about personal learning environment. There was a lot of people doing research in this issue, even if there was nothing formally published. And again, he's credited for first having the idea. He's the father of the idea. Everybody talks to him and contacts him to give their ideas or their doubts about this, or their findings. So the good thing is that he published everything in his blog, all his ideas, all his reflections, all his drafts, his draft papers, his slides, his presentations, and the people interested in the issue started reading him, talking about him in their blogs. He gets to know all the people that were interested in these issues, even if he was really far from other people that were interested in these issues. He could engage in these conversations, could have debates with other scholars about something he had made up, maybe during the night. So I think this is a very, very good example that if he had to stick to the formal publishing only, it would have lasted him 18 months to have his first communication accepted in Congress. And all this time he would have been working alone or just with his most close colleagues. On the contrary, when he first came up or showed up in a Congress, everyone was eager to speak with him directly and share everything they have been sharing on the internet. So, I don't know, you're not interrupting me at all. So, I don't know if there's any questions. If not, there's some challenges or problems that they are out there, and they have to be solved, of course. First one is everything related with the digital divide. It might not be an issue in Canada or in Spain or in some other places, but it's an issue in most places in the world. And even this, it's also an issue in developed countries. Not everyone has a web server to upload things. Not everyone has good connectivity. Not everyone has the best hardware. And of course, if you take it outside of the infrastructures, digital literacy is really, really, really an issue. So you might have your hardware in your server, but not the technological literacy, the informational literacy, etc. I'd like to say that about this, yes, I think that Lynn is right, absolutely right. So, about the digital divide issues, my belief is that both in infrastructure and in digital literacy, the Web 2.0 itself must be challenging the digital divide, but also helping to bridge it. About infrastructure, the more and more you work on the internet, the less you need a powerful desktop. Of course, you need more connectivity, but if you want to use online applications, in the end, you only need a browser and a good connectivity, of course. But hardware and software are being more less and less the issue about infrastructures. Regarding digital literacy, it's true that it's getting more and more complicated to browse the internet and know what's the good information out there and how to manage all these many applications. But there's also more and more web forums and applications just designed to share the knowledge. For instance, if you set up a WordPress blog, you have a righteous wiki that you can even make more rich about the functioning of WordPress, and you have forums about WordPress. You have a lot of places and tools to help you in your digital illiteracy. Another challenge, which was already pointed by, sorry, I don't remember who was it, on the chat, is, okay, what do we do with reputation systems? I mean, the formal publishing, I think it's okay, and it's been there for 50 years, and it's proved to be a good tool. So how do we make a blog reputated of something I write on a wiki? How do I claim authorship on a wiki, or how I made it reputated? I mean, who tells that I'm not a monkey typing on my keyboard? I think there are, at least three things here. One is we should not be more demanding with the internet than we are with paper. I mean, paper also has its little problems. The second thing is that we really have to have more and more tools to distinguish from good and bad information. And I guess that tagging and everything that is social bookmarking and all this, the possibility that more and more people can say have their say on digital content, it's more or less the same thing as citing scholarly content in your articles. So you know an article is good if there's a lot of people citing it in their other articles. In blogs, in wikis, etc., you can have the flavor or the sensation that a blog or a post is good if it's more and more linked. Of course, this is not yet looked at on the tenure track, on accreditation in Europe, but there's more and more initiatives that are taking into account what you upload to your website or to institutional repositories to get your accreditation or to get more points for your tenure track. Time. Okay. So I will go. Now that Lynn says this thing about time, I think I'm over with more or less with everything that I had planned. And about this virtual time, I'm sorry, but I don't fully agree that we need virtual time. But we need to shift our offline time to an online environment. So my opinion is that everything you do in paper, or you did in paper some years ago, now you do it on a word processor. But maybe if you, instead of taking notes, let's say on a conference, before you took notes on your notepad, now you take notes on your laptop, but why not you take notes on your blog directly and you have everything blocked? I mean, these days we do almost everything digitally on our computers. So I think that you need a little bit of time to set up your tools, to find out tools, and of course you need some time to shape things and to put them nicely. It's not the same thing to write a post-it than a blog post. But nevertheless, I think that if you make the exercise of digitizing yourself and all your procedures make them on the web or with digital tools, you should be able at least to have a synergy of 80% of what you do to being already online. I don't know if everyone agrees about this thing that I said. Maybe Kevin, that was giving kudos to Terry. So I really would like to hear from you, written or spoken, I don't mind. What are these time issues that you were mentioning? I mean, I can see some of them, of course, but I think that some of them are more related to self-organization and or being able to do things digitally. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I guess I'll just amplify just a bit is that, you know, I think you make a very compelling case, and I felt, you know, if you were a missionary, I would stand up and come up to the front and be saved, because I think that you're quite right that there's such opportunity in all of these various tools and techniques. But, you know, like we've been building them on the CIDR site and finding that we can't seem to get critical mass of people who will engage in that particular location, and that might be because they're engaged elsewhere. And the same as I mentioned with our Athabasca repository, it's a wonderful idea. It's disappointing that so few people take advantage of it. And I guess I have to, you know, tell myself to be patient both with other people and patient with myself, because you know, I don't get all the things done that I could, should, might, and I guess it will take time. You know, I guess I see the light, you know, that you've been painting for us in these past few minutes. Ismail, just one point you noted, or you said that there was a paper that was distributed, and maybe, or can you point us to your blog or a place where, if we want to get it in other format than this presentation, these ideas and some of these references you've been talking about are at?
Yes, now at the end I will give you a link with these maps I'm showing and the papers too. Yeah, I will give it to you. Oh, okay, thank you. About one thing that you said about being patient, I'm not succeeding at all with my colleagues, so I'm having tough times also trying to convince my friends and colleagues to go online too. But I think that the question about how being patient, how to have time, how to convince people, how to make them see that it's going to be benefit for them, and how you how to handle the beginning approaches that Donna was pointing now. For me, the only secret, if there is any, is that it has to be, you have to do it for you. I mean, all the blogs I've seen and all the repositories I've seen that have worked or that have more or less succeeded, it goes on a I do it for myself basis. I mean, I don't, there's people that blog for other people and do, yeah, exactly, personal is the key. It's ego, it's, I mean, for me it's more easy to have all my thoughts on a blog than on a stack of post-its. And for me it's easier to have my my biography manager on the web that spread in several places. So how to engage and how to begin with? I will first go to Donna. So I think that you should do it because you feel like it. And you should, I mean, you should not be really concerned about wanting to be different. So just make it different. Write about what you are doing, and about what you are reading, and about who are you meeting and where. Write about the things you hear on conferences. And I think that it will itself get on its way and be the way it should be. And it doesn't, I mean, maybe, I don't want to be rude, but maybe what you see is what is the image you're really giving to others, or maybe it's you think you're doing research in one thing, but you're really spending more time in other things. And I'm talking about me, for instance. And a lot of things in my blog that are not the papers that afterwards I should be focusing more time. So I really would focus more in my day-to-day than not on how I want it to be. And to give a call to people, I think that, again, I don't want to be rude, but the things that, that I've seen that would work is on an I want it to basis or on an envy basis. I think that scholars will really work quite this way. And when we see other people being invited to write a chapter for a book or being invited to give a keynote speak, if this is coming in from the blog, I think that this is a good thing not to show off, of course, but saying, look, all my efforts were worthwhile because not because I was invited, but because I found this and this and this. So I think, of course, this is not a work that it's going to happen in 6 months. I mean, things happen in 1 year or two. But yeah, I absolutely believe that it's going to be on a ego basis. It's useful for myself. If it's not, I shouldn't do it. Or maybe it's useful for myself a wiki and not a blog. And again, trying to explain all your successes. Because you were invited to impart a keynote speech, or because you found an article that otherwise you would not have found. So it's not only about you being better, but you having it more easy to work.
Hi Ismail, I'm taking over the mic here. Can you click off on yours to get rid of the feedback? Thanks Ismail. I just saw the time and I know that some people have other places that they have to get to and so forth. So before we lose any more participants, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to show us what you've been doing with personal research portals. And I'm glad Terry brought it up. I did have that link. I'm going to post it again here to Ismail's site where you can see the map that he's been using there and examples, I believe, of some other personal research portals and so forth. And I believe you can also see his papers there. The papers are also listed at the CIDR site with the recordings. So it'll all be available there. Oh, I think he's showing us now what's on there. So thank you for making that open to us. I know that's going to be a great resource for everybody here, Ismail. And thank you for giving your time to us today on a Friday evening, which I'm sure is beautiful in Spain. And thank you to everybody who was able to join us today. Take care. And oh, before I forget, Ismail, I'm just going to, can you close the window for a moment so we can announce our next CIDR session? I don't know if I can get that up now. Anyways, our next slider, so thank you very much. Our next slider session coming up is on Friday, April 25th at 11 a.m. Mountain Daylight Time. So for those of you coming from Europe, I believe that's even more than a six-hour difference now. And the session is going to be hosted by Madhumita Bhattacharya from Athabasca University, and she will be discussing tools for analysis of research data that's collected from wikis and blogs. So a bit of a tie-in to today, and we hope you can be there for that. Now, I don't know how much time Ismail's got for a few more questions, but I see Paula's got her hand up, so I'll turn the mic over to you. Paula, did you have a question? Or I think she's gone. Oh, yeah. Paula, did you have a question? No, it seems like there are no more questions, and I don't want to keep you any longer. That was really fabulous. And I'm going to post that link with the recordings of the presentation and so forth, okay, on the CIDR website. So hopefully you'll be getting some visits from there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It was really nice. Thank you.
Oh, I forgot to ask. Somebody during the presentation had asked what software you were using for your map. What was that?
It's FreeMind. It's open source, and it's really, really easy to export in Flash. So it's pretty straightforward to upload it to your site, etc. It's really cool.
Thanks. Well, I regret that I forgot that question earlier when there was more people in the room. Anyways, I will say good night and have a wonderful weekend, and I will get this recording up as soon as possible.
Okay, see you then. So bye.